in the heart of New York City, near Washington Square. In 1911, March winds were cold and bare. A fire broke out in a building 10 stories high, and 146 young girls in those flames did die.
This is a Building Bridges, your community and labor report special. I'm Mimi Rosenberg.
These young girls were working in an old sweatshop there.
The fire that changed America. March 25th is the anniversary of the Triangle Shirtwaist Fire, which for 90 years stood as the deadliest workplace disaster in New York. Now, why should we care about a fire that took place more than 90 years ago? Well, we'll find out from David Vondrelli, author of Triangle, The Fire That Changed America. David.
Hi, how are you?
It's a pleasure to have you with us. I remember studying for the bar at NYU.
Mm-hmm.
And one day I saw a very, very tiny little plaque hidden as I was wandering the halls in my agony there, and said, my goodness, I had not realized that that building was the home of the horrible Triangle Shirtwaist Fire where so many women lost their lives. And I have never forgotten that since. And I should also mention that every year there is a commemoration by members of the labor movement. And this year as well, people will meet at New York City's Washington Square Park, and union and community leaders will honor the memory of 146 immigrant workers who were killed in the tragic Triangle Shirtwaist Fire in 1911. And, well, David, you've written one of the really absolutely riveting books on Triangle, The Fire That Changed America. Why should we be thinking about and celebrating and looking at the issue 90 years hence of the Triangle Shirtwaist Fire?
East of Washington Square, outside the Brown Building of NYU, which is where the fire was. I had an experience much like yours years ago when I lived in New York, of being out walking and passing that building and seeing a plaque on the outside of the building talking about the scene of the fire. And that was really, for me, the beginning of the interest that led to this book. The Triangle Fire, which killed 146 workers, most of them young women and girls, it was a pivotal moment in the political history of New York, not just the sort of sensational stories of New York, but it came at a moment when Tammany Hall, the conservative democratic machine that ran the city for almost 100 years, Tammany was in danger of losing its grip on power in New York City just after the turn of the 20th century. The political base for the Democratic Party for generations had been the Irish and German immigrants who flocked to the city around the middle of the 19th century and became very reliable Tammany voters. These immigrant groups were being supplanted at the bottom of the pecking order by new waves of immigration from Eastern Europe, Jews who were fleeing political and religious oppression in the dying Russian Empire, and also by Southern Italians who were fleeing poverty and famine in their country, coming to New York by the hundreds of thousands and moving into the slums of the Lower East Side, which at that time were the most crowded places on the face of the earth. They were going to work in huge numbers in the garment industry, which was booming in New York City. Unlike the previous immigrants, they were not reliable Democratic voters. They didn't really see that they were getting anything from Tammany Hall. And they began, especially the Eastern Europeans, building their own political movements in New York. They started founding labor unions. They built Socialist Party in New York. They started newspapers and community centers, all independent of the old Tammany machine. And they could not be counted on to vote for the Democrats. Charlie Murphy was the boss of Tammany Hall at the time. He saw the change coming Tammany was doing less and less well in the city elections. So he knew he needed to do something to appeal to this new working class. The Triangle Fire in 1911 was the moment that he seized on to put Tammany Hall for the first time on the side of reform and progress, and to do something to appeal to this new, more radicalized and politically organized working class. He authorized the young men who were running the state legislature for Tammany Hall to create a very powerful legislative commission, and in the years after the fire, this factory investigating commission passed the most progressive set of labor laws in the country, not just fire safety and workplace safety laws, but limiting the work week, number of hours in the work week, workers' compensation. They even talked about a minimum wage, which was very radical for that period. The two men who led that commission were Al Smith and Robert Wagner at the beginning of their careers. The idea as a political strategy was a huge success. Al Smith was elected governor based on the factory investigating commission. He served four terms. He even ran for president in 1928. He wasn't elected, but 4 years later, another New York Democrat running on that same progressive urban liberal agenda was elected president. Franklin Roosevelt went to New York. He found in the United States Senate by that time Robert Wagner. And Wagner wrote the New Deal, and Roosevelt signed it. Social Security, federal workers' compensation, unemployment insurance, federal public housing, and the Wagner Act, giving workers the right to organize. All these things came directly out of the legacy of the Triangle Fire.
I was interested in how you came to discover this as a subject that you wanted to elaborate on. And again, you've done so very, very insightfully.
Well, thank you very much. It became a real labor of love. A lot of people in New York grow up with the story of the Triangle Shirtwaist Fire, at least in its outlines. I come from out west in Colorado, where it was not a part of our background as children. And it was only when I moved to New York as a newspaper reporter that I learned the story. I first heard about it when I was covering another fire shortly after I got to New York, the Happy Land Fire in 1990. An illegal nightclub in the Bronx was torched with 87 people inside. They were killed. And it turned out to be the deadliest fire in New York since the Triangle. And on the anniversary of the Triangle Fire, March 11th, and people were talking about this horrible coincidence, and that was my introduction to the fire. Then I discovered that the building was still there, as you said, at the corner of Washington Place and Green Street, and I would walk by it there in my neighborhood and look up at the windows where trapped workers had made the terrible decision whether to die in the flames or to jump from the windows. It began to haunt me, and I decided to try to tell the story again and to tell it in all its richness, not just the terrible and dramatic story of the 30 minutes on that Saturday afternoon, but to try to give a fuller sense of why it was a pivot point in American history. This factory, the largest blouse-making factory in New York, had been the scene just a year earlier of one of the most important strikes in American history, the uprising of the shirtwaist workers in New York City. This happened in the fall of 1909 and the winter of 1910. It was the first major urban strike by working women in American history. The entire shirtwaist industry, almost 40,000 workers, went out on strike, led by a handful, really, of girls, immigrant girls, who had decided to take action. It was a very stirring event. It galvanized not just the working class women, but the wealthy progressive women of New York. The women's suffrage movement got behind the strike. People with names like Vanderbilt and Belmont and Morgan, the cream of New York society, took the side of the strikers the first time this had ever happened. It was, in that sense, the first sort of glimmer of what became the urban liberal coalition of the working class and wealthy progressives. So the leaders of the opposition to the strike were Max Blank and Isaac Harris, the owners of the Triangle Waste Company. They had galvanized their fellow owners to resist this strike. So when a year later you had these workers' bodies falling from the windows of the ninth floor while thousands of New Yorkers on the streets watched, helpless, in horror, it was a double shock to the city because they knew this factory and they knew these shirtwaist workers. It was as if the cause of labor had been underlined in blood outside the Triangle factory. And that's part of the reason, that and the timing for Tammany Hall, why all the forces came together for change. And so I, with my interests in politics and in the law, this was a story that really spoke to me about the way change actually happens and the way history reaches out to us even down through the generations.
I had my interest renewed in the fire after what happened in Hamlet, North Carolina, where workers were locked into a chicken processing plant similar to Triangle and burnt to death there. This remains and should remain fresh and vibrant because the issue of sweated labor, the conditions in factories throughout the world, indeed still in this country, in areas like the South Bronx where there are still many garment shops, are not all that far removed, but for the activism of the needle trades unions like Unite and, of course, some of the social legislation that was passed as a result of Triangle. So it has a particular resonance for me that echoes and continues to be vibrant. And I really assure people that if they read, and they should read this book, it will renew, or I hope encourage them to become involved in the many movements that now exist against sweatshop labor. The issue of the women and the issue of the power of immigrants comes forth very much in this work as well. And David, can you speak about that as well?
For many of us, we almost think of women's rights and women's liberation as a phenomenon of the past 30 years. But what you find as you get into American history is that women have been pushing for social reform and for their own rights for generations. And this period of the first years of the 20th century turns out to be an incredibly rich in the history of American women, their rights, and their influence on American society. This is the period of the urbanization, the industrialization of the United States, people leaving farms and coming to cities. And this had a real changing effect on the lives of American women. They were no longer running their farm homesteads for their husbands and families. They now were going to work in factories. They were earning wages. It changed the whole sort of social order of society. There was a renewed push in this period for women to get the right to vote, and women were at the forefront of the whole movement that we now think of as progressivism, pushing for change and reform and improvement across the whole range of public life, from workplace safety to public health to political systems. And this cut across all the classes, from the very wealthiest women down to the working poor, who shared the sense that life could be better, that American society didn't have to be as brutal as it was. So this really is a story in powerful ways about women finding their voice and asserting themselves to good impact. One of the people who went to Washington with Franklin Roosevelt in 1932 was a woman named Frances Perkins, who is a figure in this book. Frances Perkins was the first secretary of the Department of Labor. She was labor secretary for the entire 12-plus years of the Roosevelt administration, one of the most important women in American history. And on that beautiful spring afternoon of March 25th, 1911, Frances was a young social worker in New York City out for a walk in her neighborhood, crossing through Washington Square, When she heard the fire engines converging, saw the smoke rising over this factory, she ran with thousands of other people to see what was happening, and she watched, stood there on the street watching, helpless, as 54 workers jumped or fell from the windows to the sidewalk, and it completely changed her life. She was the one who said 50 years later, near the end of her life, that the beginnings of the entire New Deal, the whole wave of social reform that swept the United States in the mid-century, had its beginnings in the ashes of the Triangle Fire. So these are the stories I tried to tell. I love these, you know, strong, assertive women in this story and really enjoyed getting to know them.
And who were the women? And give us a little bit of refresher, some more insight into the story of the Triangle Shirtwaist Fire on that fateful day. Who were the women who worked there? And I hadn't been aware of some of the other issues about the Triangle Shirtwaist Factory owners hiring Bowery prostitutes to attack striking workers, which was also quite an interesting characterization and response. Ah, these Simon Legrees and these awful Dickinsonian owners, who, we should also say, got off at the trial.
That's right. The Triangle employed about 500 or 600 workers, most of them young women and girls as young as their early teens. They were nearly all immigrants from Eastern Europe and from Italy. Main languages of the Triangle factory were Yiddish and Italian. They lived in the neighborhoods around Washington Square and down south into the Lower East Side. They would not have thought of the Triangle factory as a sweatshop. We now do. Everything that we picture when we think of a sweatshop, the long rows of machines, workers crowded shoulder to shoulder, long working days. All this was true of the Triangle factory, but compared to the tenement sweatshops that these immigrants' parents had worked in, the Triangle was a very modern factory, very efficient factory, mass-producing thousands and thousands of garments. It was on the 8th and 9th and 10th floor of a 10-story building. At closing time on this particular Saturday, on the 8th floor, a fire started in a bin of scraps under a cutting table. Cotton and tissue paper are incredibly flammable. The fire spread unbelievably quickly. The entire 8th floor was engulfed in flames within 5 minutes of the start of the fire. The workers on the 8th floor, where the fire started, all managed to escape. The workers on the 10th floor, where the owner's offices were, packing and shipping departments, they ran to the roof of the building and climbed to the nearby buildings. It was the workers on the 9th floor in between who were trapped by the flames. This was the main sewing plant where about 250 people worked at long rows, 8 long rows of sewing machines, putting the pieces of the blouses together. They didn't get any warning of the fire. They were getting up at closing time. The bell had just rung. The power was shut off to the machines. They were talking and laughing, getting ready to go out on a Saturday night, young people in New York. And they smelled smoke. They saw flames outside the windows. There was panic. Some of the workers ran to a fire escape in the back of the building, but it became overcrowded and far away from the wall. It dumped 24 workers to the bottom of an air shaft. Some of the workers were able to go up the stairs to the roof, but that exit was cut off by flames. Some of the workers were rescued by the elevator operators, two young Italian immigrants who very courageously ran their elevators past the flames on the 8th floor to rescue workers on the 9th floor. But ultimately, the flames filled the room. Workers were jumping and falling into the elevator shafts. The remaining door from the factory was locked throughout the whole fire. Blank and Harris, the owners, had the door locked every day at closing time so that the workers would have to pass by a night watchman on their way out and have their bags searched to see that they weren't stealing lace or thread or finished blouses. With that door locked and the elevator no longer able to run, the flames cutting off the other door, the fire escape collapsed. For for the last 100 workers or so, there was only the choice whether to jump from the windows or to die in the flames.
Well, we're going to have to leave it there, except that I so very much encourage all of you who are listening to get Triangle, The Fire That Changed America by David von Drilly. It is an extraordinary piece of work. It really does use biographical material with the story, with the narratives from transcripts that were discovered relevant to the trial, where, as I mentioned, the owners were acquitted. It is a very important book. So I thank you very much for being with us. And we have a poem that I think is extraordinary. There is a young sister, Sophia Henderson Holmes, who was an NYU student, who also realized when she was there that there wasn't any commemoration, but she noted the fire and wrote this poem just before she actually passed away. And just listen as we put Sophia Henderson Holmes on.
From bareness to fullness, flowers do bloom. Whenever, however, spring enters a room. Oh, whenever, however, spring enters a room. March 25th, 1911. At the Triangle Shirtwaist Factory, a fire claimed the lives of 146 people, mostly women, mostly children, in the plume of their lives, in the room of their lives, begging for spring, toiling and begging for spring. And in my head, as I read the history, afraid to touch the pictures, I imagined the room. I imagined the women, dressed in pale blues and pinks, some without heads or arms, sitting, some without legs or waists, hovering. Hundreds of flowering girls, tucking spring into sleeves, tucking and tugging at spring to stay alive. Shirtwaist Factory Room, 1911. Crowded, hard, fast, too fast, closed windows, locked doors, smell of piss, of sweat, of wishes being cut to bits, needle stabs, electric shocks, miscarriages over silk, fading paisley, fading magenta, falling in love will get you fired. Forever old, never fast enough, buying flowers is wasteful, so hurry, hurry, grind your teeth and soul, $6 a week sent to grandfather, $4 a week sent to Aunt Ruth, sleep over the machine and you're done for, way before you open your eyes, ma'am, madam, miss, Mrs. Mother, girlie, hundreds of flowering green spring girls in rows, waiting with needles in hands for spring to show. Women workers from Ireland, Poland, Germany, France, England, Grenada, Mississippi, thin clothes, thinner hopes, months full of why, of how, of when, answers always less than their pay, but the sewing machines grew like weeds, thick snake roots, strangling the flowers every day, strangling the roses, daisies, lilies every day, hundreds of blooming girls, hundreds of blooming spring girls. The Shirtwaist Building, 1911, 135 feet high, wooden, coal, three floors, not enough stairs, one fire escape, ending in mid-air, ending in the spring mid-air, a tender room of hundreds of blooming bright girls, hundreds of daisy bud girls, who pray for spring to enter their world, who pray and sweat for spring to enter their world. The strike the year before. And they shouted, open the doors, unwire the windows, more air, more stairs, more quiet time, more fire escapes, and to the ground, damn you, and more toilets, more time to be sick, more time to be well, and remove the fear, and slow it down, for God's sake, slow it all down. It's spring, they shouted. Hundreds of flowering girls shouted, for spring to hurry, hurry, and enter their world. And Triangle won a half day, but the doors remained locked, windows remained wired, no extra air, no extra quiet time or sick time. The fear stayed, nothing slowed, and God watched. Hundreds of flowering girls twirl, hundreds of flowering girls willow and twirl. March 25th, 1911, at Triangle. A worker is expendable, a sewing needle is not. A worker is bendable, a sewing needle is not. A worker can be sent straight to hell. A sewing needle is heaven sent and must be protected well. A sewing needle is the finger of God and must be protected well. Over hundreds of flowering girls, hundreds of flowering sweet dandelion girls. March 25th, smoke, smoke, stopping the machines, run to wired windows, run to locked doors, run to the one and only fire escape. Everyone run to the air. Hundreds of flowering girls. Smoke, stopping eyes, stopping hearts, stopping worlds. Elevator, move faster. Elevator, you are a machine managed by a human being. Move faster. Come on, faster. Carry all the flowering girls. Carry all the sweet, sweet orchid girls. Fire, catching bouquets of girls in a corner. Tall, long-stemmed lilies on fire in a corner. From bloom to ashes in a corner. Smell them in the rain. Hundreds of tulip girls. On a window ledge, pliés for life. On a window ledge, lovely ribboned young ladies on their tiptoes, twirling, twirling, an arabesque for life. Hundreds of flowering girls, smell them in the rain. Hundreds of jasmine girls. The ladders were too short. The hoses were too short. The men holding the nets were not gods, only men who never caught or trained to catch falling bodies or falling stars or hundreds of flowering girls, hundreds of carnation bud girls. And the girls were not angels, but girls jumping, not goddesses flying or hovering. They smashed, they broke into large pieces. Smell them in the rain. And the sidewalks opened in shame to meet the flowering girls. The sidewalks opened in such horrible shame to cradle the remains of violets. And the gutters bled for hours, choking on bones, shoes, buttons, ribbons, holy sewing needles. The gutters bled for hours, all the colors of spring, the cool magenta of delicate spring. And the fire ate the locked doors and the wired windows, ate the fast machines in their narrow rooms, ate the lace and hand-done pleats, the silk, the cotton, the linen, the crisp $6 a week, the eternal buzz of someone else's dreams, nightmares and screams of quiet girls, loud skull-cracking noises from shy girls. Smell them in the rain, the lilacs, daffodils in the rain.
And that's just a small piece of a much extended poem by Sophia Henderson Holmes on the Triangle Shirtwaist Fire, and for your commemoration of the sisters and what they brought us with the tragic deaths that fateful day in 1911. And again, thanks to David Bandrelli for his work.
This has been a Building Bridges, your Community and Labor Report special.